We're still under this bill of fines, right? Because it's like, you know, I get a lot of questions, and they were saying, how do you find these things? How do you source them? Where are they, right? And so we give you, Aaron gave you lots of different sources, all right? And really, relationships, I can't emphasize that enough, right? And I heard an analogy one time about hedge funds, right? And I just imagine being in a harbor and there's five pirate ships, you know, out in the harbor there, and you gotta decide which one you're gonna swim out to and do business with, right? Sometimes, you know, in a situation, you know, pirates known for their fair negotiations and trade, you know, so it's, you're kind of headed to the dragon's lair, and you know, if they were sitting here, I would talk about that, you know, it's like, because they're very aggressive, you know what I mean? They're very aggressive, and so for some of you, that might not be a good fit, right? You might opt to, you know, maybe take a little more conservative approach, do some of that creating of the notes. A lot of those are, you know, when they're done through escrow, you got title policies, you got, you know, you're bringing the buyer the liquidity event to get the money, you get your check. You know what I mean? It's a traditional escrow, that might be a better avenue for us. So it just depends, right? So I'm gonna still kind of give you guys, keep going down both paths as we go through it. So let's go through some of this. So due diligence, is that a term that you guys are familiar with?
Yeah.
Right, do you do that in your real estate investing deals? I know we've got some other lenders in the room as well that are loaning stuff out. So you're constantly doing due diligence, checking, double checking. People represent certain facts. You gotta make sure it's for real, right? So I'm gonna just do, I love this quote. There are no bad notes, just bad prices. What does that mean?
The note's okay, but you know what you're gonna pay for it.
That's right. So whatever the issues are with the note, or you know, whatever the qualities are of how that note was structured, we talked about, you know, but one buyer might want certain things that another buyer doesn't, right? So it just kind of depends. So bad price, well, you know, so really the real question then, if there's no bad notes, just bad prices, the real question is what really goes into determining the value of a note, right? So I just want to blitz through because I want to get to some case studies. You know, some that we've been doing that we're working on, some are fresh, some are, you know, a little bit within the last 6 months. And if we have time, I can go back and show that first deal. I was trying to find that and I finally found it on my machine, but it's not in this presentation. And hopefully we'll have time to go through some of that. So let's go through the six elements of a note. First and foremost, we'll come back to this slide. That's more pricing. In fact, you know, just while it's up there, just so we don't have to come back from it. In fact, you know what? You guys are getting these slides, right? Mm-hmm. So this, you'll notice this is for non-performing. This is a pricing guide for Capstone Funding Group, and you'll get this. But you'll notice this is for non-performing. First position, right? Now it says 40 to 65% of property value. That's a general range that we're looking to buy on, and even maybe even sell on. But if you're in California, you think you're getting those? You think that's even close? You know, so I've paid up to upwards of 85 cents on the dollar, you know, even 90 cents, you know, for stuff in California.
For non-performing?
So, I take that. Yeah, actually, we had one for 81 cents that we did. So it just kind of depends on what you're doing. But that was a first, that's not a second. Right, so then seconds, you'll see, we'll get you this pricing guide. This is for non-performing. Because this is pretty accurate. If you go shop different portfolios out there, you'll see that. But let's jump into these six elements. I got all these funky graphics here that'll drive me nuts.
And Travis, I guess, quick question.
Go ahead.
You've got that from trial and error, or from you just figured it out from other people that are already doing that?
You know, we set certain parameters for us, and then, you know, it's a supply and demand market. So you have to adjust our pricing guide. But like I said, we're not selling a lot. We do sell some. So we just had to have a pricing guide, but we were looking at all of these providers, what they're selling. Some of these exchanges, I think you already erased them, you know, but the exchanges, it's everywhere. You got, because individual people can post their notes for sale. Some people are asking par, you know, for a 360-month loan. They're never gonna get that, right? You got other people that are savvy, you can tell they've been posting their pool there, so it just kind of depends. And so you'll get all over. And again, it's willing buyers and sellers on an exchange. But when you come to some of these different hedge funds, you know, they have it, they're kind of setting the price, you know, for something. So it just depends. And again, we're going to go through these six elements of a note that determine the value. And these are real key. So what do you guys think the biggest risk the biggest risk when you're investing as a lender, like let's say you become the bank now, what's the biggest risk?
Or
foreclosure or bankruptcy.
The ability to repay.
Which is related to who?
Borrower.
The borrower. So your biggest risk is actually what?
The borrower.
What kind of a risk is it? It's a credit risk, right? And then I think that's big, you know, collateral is obviously key too. So that's, we're going to put that right behind it. Thank you.
Yeah.
You with me? So listen, why is collateral so important? Those are the two things you're really looking for. You're looking for that ability to repay, but credit risk, you know, if you sign a contract, you know, literally if someone says they're going to do something and actually did it, right, does it matter what the collateral is?
No.
It actually doesn't, because if they did what they said they were going to do contractually. Now, does that always happen? That's why collateral is a very close second, right? So let's just kind of go through these elements. So the buyer's equity, now how is that different to the collateral? Why is that separated out? Isn't that related to collateral? Right, they call that protective equity, right? There's a term that they use, it's called protective equity, the buyer's equity. Why is that separated out from the collateral? So if you take in terms of, you know, the buyer, that homeowner, the equity that they actually purchase, protective equity, what's what they're fighting for, right? Right, so again, that kind of relates back to the borrower. But one of the other elements is the terms. Certain terms and the way they're structured make a loan more attractive than other terms, and we'll get into a little bit of that, right? The payment history, again, has it been performing as agreed on time every time, exactly like they promised to pay? Or are they slow pay? Did they have a gap where they went non-performing? Became reperforming, had a whole modification done and a principal deferment on the back to kind of, you see what I mean? Is that loan worth less? It is, because they've had a gap, right? You know, and then just the paperwork. Some of the paperwork, if it's not tight and there's issues, you know, you hear of these, is it like a forensic file, like that the attorneys at foreclosures, like where so they're coming in. And there's attorney firms that have a whole practice built around looking for any type of a loophole in the paperwork. So if you're the bank, is that an issue? It is. So, you know, you can look at this, and Jim Heckley, this is a gentleman that's come to speak. He's been teaching a lot of this, and he's had a legal firm doing this for the last 35 years. But, you know, he said he has a career helping lenders fix what he calls toxic paper, like bad paper. And people that have bought it down the chain, you know, sophisticated buyers aren't buying this paper with some issues with it, right? So the paperwork's not tight. And so if you don't know what you're doing, you've got hedge funds that are preying on new people that want to get in the note business, right? And if they don't know everything that they know that they're talking about, and they end up buying something that has some issues to it, right? Is that a good or a bad thing? If it's you, it's not good, right? So you really got to know what are some of the things you're looking for in the paperwork. So let's just go through some of those really quick. So we've already done this, performing, non-performing, we've done that. So let's go to the borrower. So again, are they paying? I mean, that's the biggest thing is, are they paying? And do they have any history of lates, right? And they might have. You know, but you're able to see a pretty solid history on most credit reports go back 24 months, right? So you're seeing that, and you get that. But and if they aren't paying, can they or might they pay? Like if you have non-performing, you know, do they have the capacity to repay? And so for us, we'll look at some, you know, we'll see some in a bit on some notes that we did, and they were temporary situations, right? So we get times where they're still non-performing, so they haven't been paying their second, right? But everything else is pristine. They pay all their bills, and their credit score at the time of charge-off 4 years ago, 5 years ago, right, when they weren't paying, right, that hit their credit. But now 4 years have passed, and we got one of our notes we had that we bought. We were actually contacted, so we bought it as part of a pool, and immediately we record all of our assignments, right? So there's an assignment of note an assignment of mortgage and deed of trust. Well, as soon as we get those, we record them, right? Because why would you want to do that? So if the first ever forecloses or there's a payoff or whatever. So this particular guy, this was out in Florida, professional bass fisherman, right? He claimed he had no money, right? But that wasn't where the conversation started. Our first call from him was we got called. The guy had a 730 FICO. And his second had been charged off and he hadn't paid it. It was just in current, but they had charged it off and weren't reporting anymore. So what happened to his credit score? So here he was trying to do a refi. We got called by the title company, right? They were saying, hey, we've got this lien, you know, this lien, and he wants to try to do a refi on his first. He's like, he'd like, you know, we need to deal with this. And I'm like, well, yeah, we'd love to deal with it. He's, would he like to start paying? And he literally thought this thing had gone away. So it was kind of a rude awakening when he found out. And in this pool, it was a pool of 45 assets that we bought. This was our number one asset because it had about 75,000 of equity coverage. We picked it up for like 16 grand, I think, 17 grand. And so anyway, but you know, we didn't have very, very friendly calls on that first call. He's like, what? I don't know this. And then the next call, it was like, he had gone and gotten himself educated. He's like, I'll give you 5 grand more than what you paid for. I know you bought this for pennies on the dollar. Like, well, that was the second call when he figured out that he actually owed the money, right? So it took us, for that particular guy, it did take us actually foreclosing on him, but when I say foreclosing, starting the foreclosure process, for him to know that we were serious, he needed to deal with us, because he just went dark on us and he wanted to get this refi done. And as soon as we did that, I can tell you a little bit about that because we will have time to go through that, but I had a question. Go ahead.
I just may have missed something. So when you're doing these credit reports, these aren't just your average credit reports. So do you guys use a different tool or a more in-depth tool for credit reporting?
Yeah, it's a full credit report. Like you're looking at a full, you can do a tri-merge or you can do a single bureau, and but so you're a lender.
Okay, so, oh, that's right.
So you have the right to pull credit.
That's what's different, okay, got it.
Right, and so when we buy a pool, right, typically you can ask for a refresh on the credit report. Does that make sense? Okay. If it's stale and you want an updated one prior to closing, you can get a fresh credit report. And, you know, we like to do that just because I want to push it. You don't have to do it, but you know, you can push that expense to them. And what are you looking for? What are you looking for in the credit report? So I was here a month ago and we talked a lot. The difference between first and seconds, real quick, let's talk about that. What are you really evaluating if you're coming and you buy a non-performing mortgage on a first? What's your exit typically going to be through? So it's through the actual asset, the property, right?
Modification.
Right? You know, because typically, why are there so many non-performing seconds available? Why do they get charged off from the bank? Why do they do that? Rather than because are they going to foreclose subject to the first mortgage? No, they're not going to do that. Could we do that?
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of a nimble little speedboat, right, that can come in and say, hey, we'll foreclose. We're investors. We know what subject to deals mean. If you foreclose to get title, what's that? That's the ultimate legal subject to deal. No due on sale on an involuntary foreclosure. So you can fight that, right? And you can keep paying as agreed, right? So that's really important. So there was a point I was trying to make, which will probably come back to me as we keep going through these points. Fresh credit report, it was about credit reporting. It's gonna come back to me.
Oh, why do the credit report, or what are you looking for?
Okay, yeah, well, we're gonna review that right now. But so the credit reporting, right, you are looking for a story, right? You're looking for that capacity to pay. If they stumbled, are they back on track? Our bass fisherman was rolling. You know, he's paying all his bills. You know, and it was interesting when you asked, he played the game temporarily. You know, like we were going to do a mod, but he sent us partial finance. Like we gave a whole list to do an underwrite, right? But he wanted a settlement. So he kind of was like, oh, maybe they'll just, let me see what they would do on a modification. So he submitted partial financials, didn't submit his tax returns. Bank statements were missing certain pages. Why do you think that might be? Because he's hiding something, right? You know, so anyway, it worked out that one just ended up doing it. So in situations with a borrower, a lot of times when you're playing in that non-performing space, you know, you're looking for either the ability to do a settlement with them. You know, on first, it's typically not going to be a settlement. You're going to modify them, right? But on seconds, a lot of times you might get a settlement, right? And a lot of times we look for at least a 3x on our money from what we bought it for, if it's gonna be a cash settlement. I know guys that 5X is what they're after. Right, that's pretty aggressive, but that's a pretty good return. If you get a pool of 10 and you get one, you know, that settles out, typically it can carry your whole purchase and all the rest is gravy. Does that make sense? So that's pool purchasing, and we'll go through that. But when you modify, who's actually participated at helped a friend that's modified, or know people that have worked at a bank that helped modify? Anyone know that? So some people have. What are you doing when you modify someone? What is that? Why do we go through that process with someone?
Lowers the monthly payment.
Yeah, you're restructuring debt, right? So this whole CFPB, Dodd-Frank, you know, this whole push is to make sure that we're not setting, you know, it's to protect the consumer, right? So when you do these loan mods, you actually are going need to be going through an underwriting process, right? So you're actually gathering, and you got to act like a bank. When I first started out, I'm like, well, hey, if I go in and slash their interest rate half, you know, and give it some, you know, some of their payments, I was like Santa Claus, like truly. Like it's something, hey, would you guys want this? Yeah, I'll take it. What can I send you my first payment? That sounds really good. You know, I didn't really wasn't asking for stuff. I just wanted to get the thing canned. But in the event of a foreclosure, where they contest it and say, this guy set me up for failure, mean old lender, right? So you kind of want to go through this process, and it's important to make sure they qualify for what you're proposing in terms of, or what do they qualify for? So that's a process. It's a learned skill like anything else. Anyone have experience underwriting loans, like originating loans? So we got three or four of you, right? Is there a process when you fill out your 1003 app and go through this whole process? You got your, and you really end up becoming, what are my back end debt to income ratios? You know, there's all these things you do. And in our office, thank goodness, I get all that. But like, you know, when you're like, oh, if I had to do that all day, I don't know that I could do it personally. Right, so I end up approving, but I got Kristen in our corner, and she's good at it. She's a resource that's available to you guys too. That's excited. If that's something you decide you want to take advantage of, but you're looking for a good job, good income, right? It's like anything else; their ability to repay. So that's the borrower. Let's go to collateral, right? So you really just have to assume when you go in and buy a non-performing note, right? Collateral on a performing note, we went through investment to value and loan to value, right? On a performing note, so we got that. But it becomes really important that when you're thinking in terms of non-performing notes, you just have to assume that you're going to end up having to foreclose when you go in. You got to price that in. What are the costs in that particular state to foreclose? Judicial versus non-judicial. How could my expenses escalate? Right. So you got a good payment record, and I'm just giving you some those are 60% to 80%. Right, those are some ranges. That's ITV. That's what I evaluate on, is ITV, right? So not LTV. I want to know the dollars that I'm going to invest today, right, as it relates to what the property's worth, right? Now, hedge funds will try to sell you based on the LTV. Well, I'm selling it to you for 50% of unpaid principal balance. Well, that's fine and dandy. But what's my ITV? What's my protective equity for my investment, right? What cushion do I have in terms if I have to go foreclose? Because really, what they owe on contract, if they decide to never pay again, is meaningless. That's why your collateral is so important, right? So reperforming notes, they're safer, more secure, not as lucrative sometimes as picking it up a little earlier in the food chain. But I want to make one thing very, 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 very clear today. Is when you decide to play in the non-performing game, right? It's an entrepreneur's risk, right? You're building a business. It's an active business. So if you want to stay passive, then you would be teaming up with someone who has become an expert at that. You know, they do well, they have a track record, right? The reperforming notes and performing notes, they're less painful, right? It's just like, it's a little bit easier, there's less work, right? And obviously, you go to a bad payment record, you know, that's some price points that you can pay. We pick stuff up as low as 8%. You know what I mean? Go ahead. Steven, so right?
Gary,
sorry.
What time for them making the payment is it be considered reperforming? I'm assuming 1 month's worth of payment is not going to make a note buyer considered a reperforming note yet.
It's a reperforming note with 1 month. So the seasoning, see now, would you pay more? Like I'm almost, they're just out of a non-performing track record. I'm still looking for a steep discount. But if that thing's been seasoned for 12 months again, are they back on track? That's a good, you know, we've got stuff, like I literally, you've heard me talk about how you could sell off the front end of a note. When I bought these reperformers, I got, it was 62 cents on the dollar. Well, they were three payments in. You know, they were three payments in. Two of them were fresh BK13 plans, right? So I got the arrearage account with it, which was kind of cool, right when we first got started. So that's a really good question. So they do tag them as reperforming the minute they make a payment. So, but are they now? Is there a certain degree of reperformance that's worth more than others? Yeah, I've got to see.
So we're is it 12 months? Is that kind of like about
12 months? Is you know they're back. They're considered. I'm back in the game. You know, but you can buy them whenever.
I mean to hold it and season it to sell it to maximize what you're going to get out of it.
Yep.
You need at least 12 months.
12 months is good, and then that's not the only thing that comes into play. Now you're looking at your investment to value. What are you selling at? Right, based on what they owe versus what you're offering the note at. Right, because when you go out to these exchanges, let's say you're the seller listing that note for sale. Right, who's the one that's making the purchase price out there? Who determines that? If you're the seller, you own that note and you want to sell it, it's you. So you have to say, you know, if I put it out there and someone's willing to buy it, right, at par, you know, maybe there are people that do, but you know, for the most part, you're looking to do that. Does that make sense? Good question, really good question. Okay, so buyer's equity, right? And I'm gonna just talk about these because these are really important, right? Loan to value, skin in the game, you know, which really you could argue that the skin in the game is that investment to value, right? If they're coming in. But the biggest one that I find when you're dealing, that's again, non-performing, is emotional equity, right? That's mama's home, you know, she doesn't wanna go anywhere, right? And, you know, I've got a little bit of gypsy in me. I don't mind moving around, you know, new things, checking things out. But what happens when you start getting more kids? You know, and they get used and they anchor down in school. So Travis is getting really used. Not that San Diego, don't feel sorry for me. Okay, San Diego, we love San Diego. It's a good place to be. But I want you guys to really consider as you go in, look for specifically if you feel like non-performing. There's somebody in here that really want to get into that non-performing side of things, and there's a lot of money to be made, right? But what you're looking for in addition to protecting your investment that goes in, you're looking for, by analyzing the credit reports and the stories, right, that you can see, like typically a credit report and their financial package they submit for a modification, you can get a whole feel for where their money goes. And there's a story in there about that borrower. Right, and you're looking for those signs of emotional equity. Are they invested? Are they wanting to stay? Because you're getting ready to cut a deal with them, right? That's what they're doing. And I'll show you a few of those here in just a sec. Let's just get through here. So, terms of the note, right? And these are important. These are really important. So we already talked about the time value of money. A dollar today is worth more than it is 30 years from now, right? With everything that's going on there. Interest rate, variable or fixed? Is it a home equity line of credit? Some of those are interest only, and then after a certain amount of time, they recast, and now they're fixed for the life of the loan, right? So somebody's desired yield or return on your investment, right? So these are different terms that you're looking for. And the investor's yield is almost always tied to their tolerance, right? So if someone says, hey, and you gotta be realistic, if you say, I only want double-digit returns, right? And I want to sit here and tell you, if you're not wanting to be actively involved, you can still invest for double-digit returns and be passive. But for the most part, anyone here that's loaned out to rehabbers before, I've loaned out to people that are fixing and flipping, right? Can you get a double-digit return?
Yes.
The answer is yes. When do you get your money back? Why do you get a double-digit return? Because the money's back in 6 months and you got to go loan it out again. You see what I mean? Like it's more short term. You can do that on a short term basis. You can get double digit returns. To get double digit returns for something that's locked up a little longer, it's gonna take a little bit more work. right? You know, you're gonna source looking for some discounts. I'll just tell you that right now. So if you're looking to be passive, right? If you're looking to be passive, you know, right now, compare it. How many of you guys know what CDs are paying at your local bank?
A quarter or 1%.
Is there anyone that has a full 1% out there? Have you seen those advertised at all? I mean, those days, I haven't even seen those. They used to be in the newspaper. You'd see, lock your money up for 3 years and you get 2.8%. Yeah. Like, that was some amazing deal. I think it's so pathetic that they don't even advertise anymore of these CDs, because it's like, you know, who's doing that? But yet, how much money's sitting in cash?
It's going to negative.
It's going to negative?
Yep.
Yeah. There's a country that they
Denmark.
It's Denmark?
Denmark.
Has negative, I read that.
Negative interest rates on mortgages. So first you buy a house and then they send you a check every month.
Yeah, and I heard that if you put your money in the bank, they're actually charging your money in the bank.
That's true.
Like, think of that just for a minute. That's it's getting a little bit whack. So is there a balloon? Additional notification requirements. There's just a lot of these things. And this, as you go deeper into some of these, you know, I want to get to some cases. There's more stuff that we could spend our time on some of these valuations. But let's just go to this next one here. Payment history is really important, right? And I will tell you guys, normally when you buy first mortgages, performing or non-performing, pay history is readily available, right? Sometimes when you buy seconds, right, the hedge fund, whether they're just lazy or they really weren't, it wasn't passed on to them, you know, you're not getting pay history, right? So if you want to go foreclose, a lot of times that's part of the foreclosure that you'll want to have if you're going to end up, if it gets contested and you don't have a pay history, not a good thing, right? Like, you want to have that. So a lot of times what we'll do, and I think I talked a little bit about this last month, is we'll actually do trial payment arrangements that are like lower than what we're going to end up modifying for. Because the minute, there's a couple reasons for doing that. We want to, if it's been a while since they paid, right, we just want them to affirm that they owe that money, right? We want them to, one, affirm they owe the money, and two, start establishing some pay history. Because if they do that, one, I say, I really owe, they've acknowledged that I owe the whole amount, right? The minute they give you any money on a trial, because have you modified or forgiven any debt on a trial? This is just a trial. We need some history together. Right, we don't, you know, I don't care about who originated this loan. I don't know you, and as far as I can tell, you're 4 years since you made a payment, and you owe me, and you'll see how crazy some of these loans are, what they owe when I go through them with you, right? So some of you saw that a month ago, some of you will be relatively new, right?
Correct.
But go ahead.
Is part of the purpose of this just to get it on the record?
Get it on the record.
So that if you do have to foreclose, it makes it easier?
It is, and sometimes, you know, you can, we've had cases where we weren't able to give them to pay anything, we had to foreclose, and I want you to think cost. So how the cost keeps running up here. If you have an attorney that has to prepare a subpoena to subpoena the records from the previous servicer to provide a pay history, do you think that's free? So your cost keeps going up. So can you get a pay history? Yes, you can. But there is a cost to it, and it continues to go up. So one, you're just trying to get a pay history going, but two, you want to develop a history with them, you know, get their commitment to stand around, right? So paperwork, these are just some important things that I know Aaron kind of touched on them, so we won't spend too much on this. But you're typically dealing with two things. You've got an assignment, right? You've got an assignment of deed of trust or mortgage, depending on what state you're in. And then you have your note endorsement or an allonge. That's the terminology for it. And all that is, both documents have to be passed along. Does that make sense? So the note endorsement now becomes, just like you're selling a title, passing title, it's the title, how it gets passed, of a note. It's an allonge. It's a note endorsement. Right? So you'll see in a collateral file, you'll see how it goes from originator of the note, and there's an endorsement chain. So if there's a gap, is that a problem? Is it tight paperwork?
Nope.
That's a problem. You gotta go back and get that fixed. And sometimes it's pretty easy to do that. It just takes someone that's what they do all day. So Aaron, I think you told them about Richmond Monroe.
Richmond Monroe Groups. Slides on that later, but touch on
it. Well, we may not get to some case studies. Yeah, so just write that down. Richmond Monroe Group is one, and they're a document custodian. and he talked a little bit about the vault. If you don't want to store these files, the originals, you want to have, you can, because a lot of times we work this entire business, we work it digitally. Literally at a Google Drive with our folder system. We're just like you search on Google, you can search a little intranet in Office, right, and pull up all your docs. We have a whole system for doing this. You don't need the physical copies until it's, you know, until you're passing them on. You can instruct them to prepare the documents for a nominal fee. It is a cost of doing business, but that's what they do all day. So if they have to chase down and you know, what we call cure the file, right? There's an exception report when you buy it. Hey, it's missing this gap in the assignment chain. And it happened to be from the hedge fund to the note seller. And sometimes they bought from an entity that went out of business. And so now they have a representative, right, in receivership if the assets were in bankruptcy. They got to get it signed, you know, who had authority to sign. So they got to go back and chase that. And why is that important to have that? Right, can you still go do a workout without that?
You can work out, but you can't foreclose, right?
Perfect, right answer. So you can do a workout. So our very first workout on a second mortgage, I had it all done with this guy in Texas. You know, we had the whole thing done. We were getting ready to just, you know, write it up, and I got notified by the gal that was helping us. And she said, you know, there's a gap in the endorsement chain. And I'm like, wow, when did we know that? And at this time, I was just like, well, the guy, it's negotiated. We have a loan mod. He just gave us $2,500 down and $360 a month, and it's still paying today. And so they went and cured that. Just if I ever wanted to sell, I paid to have that, to get chased down that document and get the person to sign it that needed to have that. So it's just a complete file. Does that make sense? So you'd still want to do that if you ever had that. So great answer. Thank you. Was there a question? Go ahead.
Richmond
Monroe, M-O-N-R-O-E Group. And they're a document custodian. They have a lot of fee for service things that they do, making sure that your collateral files are tight, right? Helping you do that. They do some cleanup on that. You know, mortgagee's title policy, you know, that's included on a lot of those, right? Proof of property insurance. On first mortgages, is property insurance more important than on a second mortgage?
Loaded question.
Who typically monitors insurance and taxes?
First.
The first or the second?
First.
Right? So as a second mortgage holder, is that really one of your concerns? You want to know if it's helpful, but who's monitoring that? Taxes, insurance, they're actually typically are escrowing. And that's why I love these government loan mods. They're all required to escrow. Right? So they're escrowing taxes and insurance to not get behind. The question I saw kind of...
On the document issues, for your company, do you require that in advance of purchasing the note to only buy clean ones? Or do you figure out that after you've bought it?
You can do that. You can do that and require it, and in escrow, you can do it. Like, you know, all those things that Aaron ran through, all of those stipulations you literally can have as a requirement of escrow, right? If you're in the non-performing note business, you won't do quite as much business. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you're buying problems and fixing problems. That's why you're getting a discount, right? So when you do the research, some people like literally will not even touch seconds for that reason. On the first, you pretty much on a collateral file, all those things, you just do your due diligence checklist. Got it. It's got everything, looks good. All I gotta do is get these people to pay again. File's looking pretty clean and tight. Right? On seconds, it's like, you know, you're missing quite a bit of stuff typically. You know, that's what I was doing when I lost my train of thought. We were talking first versus seconds, right? You know, one, you exit on a first mortgage, you exit through the property. Right? Typically the collateral is a really key piece of evaluation. Borrower is important, but on a second, right, I think I was here last month and talked about this, people say, well, what are the five data points, right, that you really evaluate in your due diligence on before you invest in second mortgage? Does anyone remember what my answer was who was here last time? Man, I'm a bad teacher. That's my business, right? You know, but point number one, let's write them down, because this is on a second, right? we've gone through all these elements that we're looking at. What I'm going to say was already on here, but on non-performing seconds, data point number one, so this is NP seconds for your due diligence. The most important thing that I look at, number one, is credit report. Okay? Who knows number two? Credit report.
The employee?
Number three, credit report.
Okay, there you go, that's easy.
Number four, you just said it. You just said it, Glenn.
Employment,
their capacity to repay. Because am I, and why is collateral not up there right now? Like collateral, literally, for me, on seconds, it's sixth or seventh. For me on seconds, because I'm really looking for their ability to repay and emotional equity. Right, so right behind, employment's technically probably number five for me. Like I'm looking for that, you know, how long have they been at the house? And are kids in school, you know, it's like, and you can find out some pretty crazy stuff, you know, through skip trace reports, you know a lot of stuff. you can play detective and you're really looking for that. So those five, you know, and you guys think I'm joking around, but those are that's the order. Credit report, and it'll blow your mind the things that a credit report will tell you, right? So Aaron talked about our international captain for American Airlines. You know, if a guy's got, he's modded his first mortgage to 40 years, what'd that just do? Lowered his payment, created room for my second, and then he's got two bright, shiny Beamer payments to the tune of 2,400, was it? Like 23 and change?
Yeah.
You think that guy's wanting to get back on his feet, lost a home, he had a condo in, he temporarily got transferred out to Orange County for American Airlines in California. Bought a place out there at the high. It was getting short sold, so when they got transferred back, you think he wants to hang on to the house that he owns? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some emotional equity when he moved back. So he owed us a bunch of money. So let's just jump through this, and I want to get into a couple of case studies. So real quick, this is a big slide, right? This is a big slide. Three things that will kill you in the note business. And these are areas, if I had to focus in, I would just really understand, you know, just because a tape that you get from a note seller says that taxes are X, do not believe what it says on the tape, on the spreadsheet, right? Verify, go check, and you can actually see on state and county website, or county websites, county report, the taxes. But then what we often do is we actually will call, because we want to make sure, sometimes if there was a tax sale, and someone bought this, I mean, that's even, you gotta make sure that you know where the tax are at. And title, I don't claim to be an expert on title. I lean a lot on experts on that, but I'm trying to get, that's a big area. And if you get good at that, there's other money to be made negotiating with other, you know, situations on title. So title's a big deal. And then obviously blighted property, if you're just, Google Earth says the house is there. Looks like there's a house there. You know what I mean? It's like we use, did you talk about REOBroker.com?
No.
So write that down, REOBroker.com. Some of you met Darren Moon that was here last month. We do a big event once a year, our Known Investor Summit. We've done two, our next one's coming up in January. And Darren Moon just came back from an international, got his international master's in economics over in Madrid?
Business.
And he came back, and his dad is the head of REOBroker.com, started that group. And I'm gonna talk about both of them in a minute, but Darren Moon was here. He came to town for an event here on notes, and just, I mean, he's a sponge to learn. Had been all day at the event, and came over with us the first night to this event to hear it again. And he said the presentation, he got a whole bunch of different stuff out of it, and it was a very similar presentation to what I did. But he's bought 75 notes in his first year, right? He's already worked out 12 of them, something like that. So he's got like a 5,300, 40, maybe just under, it was something, maybe it was 4,300, I can't remember.
But
passive income coming in his first year. So that's impressive, but he's also kind of stepping in to dad's shoes, who's been 30 years in Orange County, and he sold 8,000 REOs. So REOBroker.com, the reason this is an important resource for you guys is there's about 180 if you want to play outside of your market. For me, I had a really hard time saying, do I want to leave where I can go down and kick the tires and check on things, right? It was really hard for me to get past that, right? So we wanted to do that, and but REO broker, these are brokers who represent, what's an REO? And what is that? REO Department of the Bank is bank-owned property, right? So they represent lenders. So what are we?
Lenders.
Lenders. So property preservation, occupancy checks, you know, getting stuff ready to resell, right? Interfacing with the boots on the ground. So we've been able to, in New York, I had a reperforming note that went down 2 payments. I'm like, what the heck? This lady seemed like gold, and she put 25 grand down on her loan mod. So she's got some skin in the game, right? So I'm thinking she wants to stay. Well, she was 2 payments down, right? And so I was able to get online, go to REO Broker. Will you just do me a favor? I just want you to drive by the house. And, you know, I send gift cards or, you know, you got to be respectful of people's time. They want to do this because they could eventually end up getting a listing if you ever have to get the property back, right? When you get a deed in lieu of foreclosure and take it back, or you have to foreclose to get title, who can help you resell it? Right, an REO broker, right? So anyway, they drove by and found out that the bottom was being rented out. Right, the bottom floor was being rented out of this house, and they were still living there. So, and the number had been disconnected. He helped us. Did a skip trace report. We were able to find another number for the borrower's business, because they had been clockwork for, I think I've owned that for almost 2.5 years, right? And we got back in touch. I didn't know at the time that they had a beauty salon, right? I didn't do that in my due diligence. That didn't come up. So he found out. Oh yeah, they own a beauty salon down over here. So just, you know, I got all this additional data, and this is a loan that I hope she pays it off and just stays in it forever. You know, it's at 2,070 something a month, and it's really good. But so just, those are things where, and she got behind on taxes, found that out, we did the checks and stuff. So anyway,